passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver. Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. Every week, as always, we always start our show with our hot topic. Our hot topic is something that either has warmed the cockles of my heart or gets me hot and bothered under the collar. I've been trying to make some real headway into getting more cockle warming than neck red rubbing on the show, because after all, I like to think of this as a spiritually based show, and being spiritual and being irritated are not mutually exclusive. In fact, I think that sometimes it's very spiritual to be irritated, and it's certainly very heart healthy to allow yourself to be irritated and not just ohm it all away. If you're really angry, you need to get angry. And if you're having a wide variety of feelings, it's actually very healthy to express those feelings. I know tonight's guest is probably going to agree on this with me, but he's been on the show before. He could surprise me. He could call that I'm full of load of crap, and that's okay too. That makes for interesting radio. So we will get to introducing tonight's guest. Very glad to have him back. But again, we're going to do the hot topic. My hot topic this week is really directed, I've been on air for 14 years now, not always on Om Times. I've been on a number of different places. And my hot topic tonight is really geared towards those listeners that I've had who may be in their, even in their 50s, their 60s, their 70s. I know at times I've had listeners that even go in their 70s and 80s, because I've had clients in their 70s and 80s that I've worked through the years who do that. And it's my hot topic is about staying real and integrity with where you are in your life. And it's a hot topic for me because I'm sad to say that last week when I went down to Florida to help my father transition from a rehab back home, and that's what everybody thought was going to happen, he transitioned instead. We all thought he was going home, and within 36 hours he went from "we're going to take you home" to "he had passed." He was almost 91, so it's hard to say that it was unexpected at 91, but it was unexpected. My mother expected him to come home. We expected him to go home. Unfortunately, what we found was that my father, and I love him dearly, did not prepare well. He prepared as much as we pushed him to, and in some ways left us, unfortunately, at a time of grief with a lot of crises to put out. He hid from the fact from us that my mother's cognitive stability was weak and that she was struggling. And we had tried for 2 or 3 years to get them to come home, to be in a better place, to get us more involved with things that we would have to take over. And he always said, "Oh, no, I'm going to live to 100. I'm going to live to 100. I'll worry about it at 99. And he had a good run. He was almost 91, but he didn't live to 100. He had stuff scattered all over, and now my sister and I are picking up the pieces because he was too proud to ask for help. And I am a little hot under the collar. I'm a little hot under the collar that no matter how many times we tried to talk to our parents and tried to say, "You're likely to pass before mother. There is an 8-year difference," that you had lots of physical issues that were dragging you down the last couple of years. That need to keep proud and independent has now negatively affected us and my mother and all the messes we have to go through. Am I sad that he's gone? Absolutely. But my grieving is going to have to wait because I have several fires to put out because he was too proud to be honest with himself and with us and let us be involved. I'm sharing this because some of you have been following me for 14 years. We're like family. And so I share this with you that hopefully if you are getting on in years, or you have somebody who's getting on in years, that you will say, please, we don't want you to ever go away, but you will at some point. And please don't leave us with an unfortunate time of having to deal with our grief and your pride and your bad decisions near the end of your life. So that's my hot topic today. I will introduce tonight's guest and I will let him weigh in on the hot topic. We're having back Michael Oden. He is a behavior specialist. He's going to tell you I'm behaving badly. I should not say any of this thing on air, I'm sure. With a master's in counseling and psychology, an inspirational speaker, award-winning author, and much, much more. And so, Michael, I'm going to let you weigh in. I know that you're have got a lot to share with us this week. Michael, welcome back.
Hey, it's nice to be here. Nice to be back. So this topic about not preparing, I've been listening to a lot of financial radios, financial stations on the radio in the past, like months, and they say that almost 85% of Americans do not prepare for the other side, or prepare to leave, or are in financial situations to allow the rest of the family to live in peace. And that concerns me, because then you have a lot of people who live check to check. So a lot of people do not realize how important it is to have your financial, you know, matters in order. And for some reason, we're scared to look at money. Money frightens us. We're scared to look at the checking account every month to see if somebody's taking anything, or just to check up on it. And we come to this point where if we don't look at it and we avoid it, it will go away, or it will take care of itself. And you just made a perfect example of what happens when things are not taken care of, when financial matters, when our affairs are not in order. And I can hear the frustration on your voice. I get frustrated because I have situations in my own family where people are not financially secure at a particular age because they did not do what they needed to do, you know, to transition to the next phase of their life. And that's one of my pet peeves. One thing about me is I need to know that I am financially secure, so when I want to do something, I can pay for it. I don't like owing anybody. I don't like sitting there and going, can I afford it, or did I overdo it, so then I'm strapped paying it back or accumulating debt. And the most Americans have what, anywhere from $8,000 to $15,000 worth of debt, you know, and that's troubling. So I get that.
Yeah, and it's not just about the financial debt in this case, because there really was none, I have to say. They managed their finances beautifully, except for the fact that nobody knew his filing system. Nobody knew that he had several different bank accounts. Nobody knew where his insurance policies were or were not. And he didn't accept our help to, you know, put us on the accounts, or let us, you know, there was a lot of things. I mean, my mother is not going to be selling pencils on street corners, but the amount of not keeping us in loop with her, with where her cognitive stability was, not having an organized, well, you know, because he couldn't like explain everything to her and expect she was going to remember it or show things or know where things were. Mm-hmm. It was like playing Sherlock Holmes to, you know, do things, take care of things, figure things out, find out things. So I agree with what you say about the financial stability, but it's so much more than that. If you have to step in and have a parent that's not competent to continue their life to be run, and the other parent was secretive and didn't do anything, it's a recipe for disaster. It's about information sharing. It's about knowing what the situation is that you're going to leave behind. And I remember when I saw my father in the hospital when he had his first issue in February and I flew down, the last time we spoke, he said, I'm going to get out of here as soon as I can and go home and take care of your mother. Your mother needs to be taken care of. And he knew it, but he never made it back. He wanted to, he planned to. Mm-hmm. And this is what I want the listeners to think about. You may think that, oh, I want to be independent, or I don't want to burden my kids, or I don't want to worry them, or or whatever. But if you're in a situation where you're going to leave a spouse behind and there's adult children involved and you don't have at least one of them looped in on what's going on, and you're going to count on the person who maybe never touched the checkbook, you know, never knew where any of this stuff was, they had no idea. It's just, it's an exhausting disaster.
So Dr. Shaw, was it pride? I mean, was there a thing that I didn't want to look like I was helpless or powerless, so I kept it all in, and I can take care of myself, because a lot of my mother's like that. I still want to be independent, but Mom, you can't. We got this, you know, because they love their independence. That's one of the things that elderly always want to hang on to, is just to still be independent. But there needs to be a time where you let it go.
I think part of it was pride, and I think a part of it was a lack of accepting that maybe he was reaching a point where he couldn't hold it all together as he always had. And that's very difficult.
Right.
I mean, it is a difficult thing. But for those of you that are out there listening to this show tonight, and or whatever whatever point, which this is a live call-in show, and I forgot to mention it. I'm just a little out of pace today. So please call in at 202-570-7057 if you have comments or would like to ask questions of tonight's guest, Michael Oden, or myself, Dr. Kevin. We would love to have you call in. I think it's a matter of pride, of not wanting to need help.
Right.
And we have lessons to learn from that, because we're all going to be there someday.
Oh, yes.
How old is your mother, Michael?
She's going to be 95 in October.
Same generation.
Yeah, same generation. And she's the same way. And I keep telling her, Mom, you know, look, we just took her driver's license away like last year, you know, and the health issues are starting to come. Her brain is sharp as a tack. She gives me a history lesson every time I go visit her, you know. But there's that. It's always about independence, you know. If you look at how we're born dependent, and then we end up being dependent, you know. It's really this cycle, you know. And like you said, we're all going to go there. So I always tell people, take your time and enjoy your life.
Yeah, and you know what? The last Saturday night in January, before he had the first of a series of health issues that led to this. The last Saturday night in January, they were still dancing. They still went to the local dance at the retirement community they were in. They were still dancing every Saturday night. They were still going to music appreciation every Friday night. They were still going to coffee every. They had a extremely. He lived right up till he died.
Wow. That's excellent.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes you have to stop, and this is for your 95-year-old mother, and this is for you and me in 20 or 30 years or whatever it will be. You have to think of the consequences of the people that are left behind when you go. If you really care
Absolutely.
About them, don't leave them a mess.
That's true.
So that was the hot topic, Michael. We've got both between now and break. Let's get started with what's going on with you and where this time, Mr. Behavioral Specialist and Communication Expert, would you like to communicate to us about where you'd like to take my listeners outside the box?
Excellent. I'd be glad to do that.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Well,
I'm waiting for you.
here we go.
Yeah, no, I'm turning this over to you. We're waiting with bated breath. Don't give me dead air. They'll kill me.
All right, I gotcha. So here's what happens is I've interviewed tens of thousands of people in my private practice and in my public practice. And one of the things my clients need to know, and people out there need to know, is that they need to understand that everything we do, feel, and think is directly related to our childhood experiences. That's one thing. I always go back to childhood and how we were shaped, because we subconsciously move through the world, you know, by a blueprint we created to survive or to live. So we shape our world by what we saw, what we heard, what we feel, and what was told to us, and be it positive or negative, and we pop out into the adult world behaving almost the same way to survive in our childhood. And what most people don't realize is that they move through the world in a subconscious state. And they wonder why they do this behavior, and they wonder why they can't stop it. Like it's like picking a particular part. Why do I keep picking that person? Why do I keep doing that certain thing that I don't like doing? And when we go back, we go, wow, that was a survival mechanism that I needed 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago that worked. And guess what? We don't need it anymore, but it's so ingrained in us, you know? And because this behavior subconscious, you know, it allows us to, you know, to do these things in a subconscious manner that we can change once we bring it to light. And one of the things people are afraid of is to bring something up because it stings. And when it stings, we know something, we're going to put it away, put it down, bury it, and keep moving and keep punching the time card of life. And so what I've really seen over the year is how uncomfortable and scared it can be to bring up something that you put away so you can live in the adult world and try the best that you can.
Well, I think that this is an interesting question here, which is, is it about living in an adult world, or is it about pretending to be an adult because society has created expectations that are unachievable for anybody to quote unquote really be an adult in truth?
Right.
Does society require us to be other than who we are to quote unquote be an adult? What do you think, Michael?
Well, what I see is that if we get our basic needs met as children from our caretakers, and this is the miracle we're talking about, because 96% of families in America have experienced some form of dysfunction or trauma, right? And so that wound is carried forward. So you may be 10, you may be 30, 40, 50 years old, but there's that little boy in you that's stronger than the man you want to be that controls certain behaviors. So then now when you add what you just said is our society makes us strive for these goals that are unattainable, that wound or that doubt is exacerbated 5, 10, 15 times. And here's a perfect example. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Look at the that scandal we have, the Varsity Blues scandal?
Yes.
Did you hear about that?
Oh, yes. It's all over.
Oh, my God. Here you have every resource in the world, and you still have to have cut corners to get your kid into a particular school where that means you didn't do something to the child to make him sufficient and have a certain amount of grit so he can learn how to struggle and get through things. And so we hand feed him.
Well, you know, there's another interesting perspective of that, Michael. And I know we're going to be going on break any moment now. So when I hear the music, we just have to wait. But up and speaking of the music, there it comes. I am here today with Michael Oden, behavior specialist. Call in 202-570-7057 and be part of the conversation here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Ohm Times. Remember, we are a live call-in show, so be part of the conversation. Come talk to Michael and I, or you can go to facebook.com/mydrkevin. When you get there, make sure you like the page. I'm a likable guy. You will see a post about Michael and how to contact Michael, which is michaeloden.com. More information, and you can leave your questions there if you are call shy. If you're call shy, then Facebook post and we'll still bring your question and you can still be part of the conversation. Never miss that opportunity. So, Michael, we were talking about the varsity scam, the getting into college, the varsity blues. Well, the interesting thing, which especially considering what you were saying in our first segment, was, you know, did these children even want to go into these high pressured, high stress that are supposed to be some of the best colleges in the country, where certainly to stay there, to maintain the grade level, to do the pressure, did they really want to go, or was this parent, were these parents shaping them in their image? And why did these parents have so little faith that their children could do it on their own? I mean, I think if I was one of these kids, did they know that their parents did it? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Was it done with it? And what lesson does it teach? What morality does it teach your kids if you involve them in cheating the system? It says, hey, we're wealthy or we're famous, so it's okay to cheat. Where does this come from? I mean, well, right now we're seeing it echoing throughout Washington, D.C., throughout so many places where money makes it right.
Thoughts? Yes. And you mentioned about adult expectations, that America has adult expectations for us, and we're supposed to meet these this criteria before we die or something to die. And if we don't make them, then who are we? Then we're failures, you know, and that's a lot of pressure. So then you have, you know, we have the people who have every resource you can imagine. These are multimillionaires and billionaires who, to me, they have certain, it's like they had that with their own kid. So we got to help them along instead of doing the old fashioned way of earning it, studying hard and go to the school that accepts you. Because if you go to a certain school, a fancy named school, then guess what? Then I'm accepted by my peers or peers that I associate with. What school did your kid go to? What school did your kid go to? Well, mine's going here. So there's all that. I've heard that before and I've seen it. As opposed to, well, my kid's just going to college. I was talking to my intern and she's just happy to go to college. She's the first in her family to go to college. So she's very grateful that she has the opportunity to get a higher education to improve her life. Where this other world is, you go to a particular school, guess what? I believe I'm going to help my child with the future. But like you said before, you're not teaching them any work ethic. You're not teaching them any values. You're not teaching them any morals, anything to teach their kids, and believing you can get away with it because you have the money. And it's sad. It's really sad. You know, I'm like, as long as we go to college, but that's me. I'm like my mother.
You know, stubborn?
Go to college, yes. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Did you go to college? Yes. Did you like it? Yes. Validating the experience as opposed to having a label and just said you went there. Now, how was it? What'd you learn? You know? So, and it's really, boy, it's something else.
Well, you know, and part of what is you know, we have, you know, people in power, in positions of power in this country that say that we shouldn't, you know, that it's illegal to have like quotas. And I understand some of that. On the other hand, so any of these people could have hired full-time tutors, could have insisted that their kids could have got 10 times the advantage of the struggling kid out of an inner city who's going to get in on a scholarship if they can get in, who may, you know, discover the cure for cancer or create the next great computer technology thing that's just doing it on intelligence alone. And I look at it and I go, you know, if anybody tells you it's a fair world, they lied. It's not a fair world.
Yeah.
And money buys you lots of stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I work in the inner city. I work in South Los Angeles. I've seen this side of the tracks and I've seen the other side because I have class on both ends. And what I've seen is that I've seen where you're in the inner city, you're expected to fail. You're expected to only go so far because that's what you know. That's what you see. Leaving prison is like graduation. My dad's getting out of prison. Hey, let's celebrate. And the kids start saying this. Well, I can't wait to be able to go to prison. I've heard this, right? And then you have the other tracks here as well. My dad is wealthy and I'm not really motivated, but he'll buy my way in. I've seen that, just like it's like we were talking about. And there's no motivation. There's no urgency. There's no purpose. Everything. I never had to earn anything, you know? So you have two worlds that really are, wow. I don't even know what to call it yet.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. I mean, this is coming to the surface at this time when we're also dealing with issues like, you know, Trump pulling strings to get security clearances that were not deserved for his daughter and son-in-law, them being in positions which they have no qualifications for. How can you be a senior advisor on something you have no knowledge of?
Nothing.
No, I mean, you know, some of the best minds are available when you're president of the country and when you can put your ego aside and actually listen to what they say, you can make good, thoughtful, well thought, well advised decisions. We know none of that's happening right now.
What about that ego, sir? I mean, that's a big one to put aside.
It emboldens our current situation, emboldens people to self-justify. I always love Cole Porter said that. I got to get this quote right one of these days. I have it. I always have it almost right. But he said, you know, that that the wealthy could afford not to have morals. The poor couldn't afford them. So they're all stuck on the middle class.
Wow.
And we're seeing how that plays out today with this Varsity Blue scandal, with the pull strings to get a security clearance that every top advisor said, no, this is a danger to our country. They shouldn't have it. Whatever. Give it to them.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Bend a little. Yeah. And like you said, it will trickle out to the masses, to the people who think like that and who have the resources to pull that off, you know, and it is tragic. It really is.
So this is the segment where, so tell us the name of your book.
Okay. The book is called When Nobody's Home. Okay. And it's called Reveal and Heal the Trauma of Childhood Wounds. And what it does, it takes you behind the scenes of growing up in a fatherless environment and how not getting specific needs as a child from your caretakers impacts your decision-making and how you identify yourself and how you move through the world. And one of the specific topics about is I use alcohol and drug addiction. I'll call it addiction, but in my term, if I use the needs-based method, it's called meeting a need excessively by using drug and alcohol, okay? And so because I've interviewed over 12,000 people, and 100% of them is about trauma and how the alcohol impacts that decision, and the drug and alcohol temporarily relieves the emotional pain.
So one of the things. So first of all, when we go on break next or after the show is over, make sure you go to facebook.com/mydrkevin in tonight's show under the comment. Write the title of your book and the link so people can hit the link and go buy it, because mm-hmm. that didn't come in the bio that I got from you.
Okay.
So I want to make sure it's on the comment field, the name of the book and a link so people can, again, go buy it. But, you know, I found this very interesting because you did it from a drug and alcohol perspective when nobody's home. And one of the things that I discovered doing the work that I've done with ADD and ADHD kids, which is why so many atrocities were allowed to happen to these kids and them become cash cows and laboratory rats for pharmaceutical companies, had to do with the fact of when you have a second or third, especially a second or third generation of single parent or latchkey kid or both parents, that you didn't have parents present when there was nobody home, when your child was being more raised by an 18-year-old chewing gum at a daycare center than they were by you, that these children grew up into parents that didn't know what good parenting skills looked like because they didn't have them. They didn't have
That's
the role
right.
models. You have this. I mean, this has been an increasing issue since the 70s. It started in the 60s. I mean, my first several years of my childhood, I was raised either by a cousin or a next door neighbor who I adored that was like a second mother to me. Sometimes I called her mom by accident because I saw her more when I was a little kid than I saw my mother who worked.
There
that was
go.
Back in the 60s. But
wow.
That's why kids, when they show up, when these ADD and ADHD kids, or kids that are just, you know, or kids that are highly creative or highly intelligent, or kids that are not in a, I can squeeze them into the box and let the education system raise my child kids, that it's so easy to get them medicated because the parents want to believe when the doctor says, well, your kid has a problem, they need this drug. Because it they go, whew, I don't have to parent. They may not think
yeah.
that. They may not think that, but if you weren't really parented, if you didn't have two parents, if you didn't have a parent that was there when you got home from school to read a book to you, I don't care whether it was your father or your mother or a grandparent, it used to be grandparents. Remember the time when grandparents were really
yeah.
present and helped? Okay.
Yes.
How much of that has gone away?
Oh, my God. Dr. Kim, I'll tell you, 95% of my clients did not have a parent. And that's over 12,000 people I've interviewed. And then you say, like, it's generational. They don't know how to parent. And so, like I said, how are they going to meet their needs? There's this kid. Anybody can have a kid, but can you raise a kid? Can you show up for the kid? Can you act like you care about the kid and that they matter? And I talk about that in my book. And people who have read the book and came back to me said, it was like you were looking over my shoulder into my life, knowing what I didn't get from my parents and why I responded a specific way or why I was so sad all the time. Because everybody wants the main people in their life to validate them, to know they matter. You know, but I got an uncle, but that's not your dad. But I got a neighbor, that's not your dad. That's not your mother. You want the main people. They carry the most weight, they have the most influence, and they are the ones we are just waiting for. Just wait and say, hey, do you care? Do you see me? And if not, guess what? Then our behavior is going to indicate so, and society will pay. And you think this this epidemic we have in America, this opioid epidemic, is about opioids? No. It's about emotional pain they're trying to drown out.
Well, and I agree. I mean, and it's about all the ways that we set kids up to fail. We set them up to fail. We set them up with unreasonable expectations. You love your statistics. I can tell you throw them out. It's like you're munching popcorn. And but so, you know, but there is kids that get diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, when they're getting diagnosed in kindergarten or in the first grade, have a high percentage of being the youngest ones in the class, and they actually didn't have it. They were just the youngest in the class. So they were a little less emotionally suited, and so they couldn't sit there with their hands folded for 8 hours. Well, I can't sit there with my hands folded for 8 hours. If you're going to make me sit there for 8 hours, my hand's not going to be folded. It's going to be slapping you upside your head until you let me get up.
I'm going to be twitching.
Why would I expect a 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8-year-old to be able to do it? The teacher gets because to get up and walk around.
Right, that's old school beliefs. Sit down, be quiet, information in, information out. Follow the rules.
Well, you'll love this one. I call it the vomit system of education, Michael. You shove it down their throat, and if they vomit it up in the right order, you pat them on the back and, you know, give them a good swift kick in the backside and move them to the next grade. You don't care if they really
there
do
you
it.
Go.
As long as they can vomit it.
I like that. That's right. Information in, information out. Next. What did you learn? How was the experience? None of that. No validation of any of that.
Nope, not at all. No. So we're going to try to pretend that we're going to stay somewhat in the format of the show, though you've done it before.
Okay.
So where would you like to take my listeners behind the curtain? Where do you think that there is some truth that is being really misrepresented out there? Where are my listeners drinking the Kool-Aid? And do you want to give them a little reality check?
Yeah, I'll give a reality check. Here's one.
Since I've been working
with alcohol and drug offenders for the last 20 years. You know.
There is our music. You can't hear it. I can. We'll be right back with Michael Oden. And he's gonna give you our reality slap upside your head. We'll be right back on the Dr. Kevin Show.
The Real Conscious Connection, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wound, sir?
911, what's your emergency?
Please, help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. Remember, we are a live call-in show. You can call in and be part of this conversation, 202-570-7057. I'm here with behavioral specialist, communication expert, international speaker, trainer, and workshop facilitator, and author Michael S. Oden. And Michael's book is When Nobody's Home. And you will find, if you come to facebook.com/mydrkevin, Michael will not only comment and leave the comment underneath that about the name of his book, but a link where you can find it. So, Michael, welcome back for our last segment. And you were starting
right,
to say, boom, go.
Boom. Well, one of the things I've been encountered over the years is through alcohol and drug addiction and getting the needs met through that behavior is that addiction is an allergy. And I always had a problem with that. And one of the reasons why is because the alcoholic is not a allergic action. They say it's an allergic action that creates a toxin which decreases the inhibition and causes irresistible craving for alcohol. Okay, so if I drink it, I create this allergy and I want more, right? And I never got my head around that. I don't understand that. In the needs-based method format, it's like this. You're getting something out of it, otherwise you wouldn't do it. You need more of it. That's no different than me. I'm a golf guy. That's no different from me going, I need to golf. I got to go to the driving range. I can't take it anymore. I need to hit some balls. Okay? So when this gentleman named Alan Marlatt, in 1973 at University of Washington, he did an experiment. He gave one group, was told that they'd be drinking alcohol, and indeed were given alcohol. And then the next group was told they'd be drinking non-alcoholic beverages, and that's exactly what they were given. Then the next group was given alcohol, but instead they were given non-alcoholic drinks. So they were tricked. And then the final group was told they were drinking non-alcoholic, but they were given alcohol. And basically, here's what happened. The results show that for both alcoholics and social drinkers, the subjects who expected to sample a drink containing alcohol drank twice as much. Is that interesting?
Repeat.
Want me to repeat that again?
Repeat that again.
Okay, the results showed that for both alcoholics and social drinkers, subjects who expected to sample a drink containing alcohol drank almost twice as much beverage as those who expected to receive only tonic. Just by the idea that you're getting alcohol, you wanted to drink more. Even the social drinkers wanted to drink more, and not the alcoholics. Okay. So this study shows that people don't drink more because they're under control of alcohol. They drink more because they're expecting the intoxicating effect of alcohol. Does that make sense?
Interesting.
They want the idea of what I'm going to get out of it. When I ask a person why they did drugs or alcohol for a long period of time, they say they liked it. I know you liked it, but why did you do it? What need was being met by doing it? I go, I hung out with the wrong people. They're not the wrong people. They're the people. What about the people were you getting out of it by using drugs with them? And then I go down my needs list and they go, oh, community, great. Acceptance, great. Respect, great. That's why you did it with them, and that's what you were getting out of it. So it's really not the drug per se. That's just a symptom. The whole idea is you're getting something you never got. And what I do is I go back to their childhood is, you probably never got that at home, did you? And 99% would say, no, I did not. So I had to go out to the streets and look for it. Had to go over here and look for it in a tragic way. So the whole thing is, my whole goal is to empower people that if you get the right information, as opposed to being powerless, I can empower you by giving you the information you need to move forward without hesitation, because the information you're given is debilitating you. It gets you off the hook if I say you have this allergy. You're off the hook. And notice, what is an allergy? An allergy is an automatic physiological reaction, right? You know, difficult breathing, watery eyes, swelling, skin rash, those sorts of things. No one gets that when you drink. I don't see anybody getting a rash when they drink booze. No, they don't. What they get is to escape reality. So they don't have to think about the pain that happened many years ago or so for a short period of time until it wears off. And guess what? We're going to drink again. We're going to hit the pipe again. We're going to hit the needle again. It doesn't matter which one. Until that is handled, will we be able to, you know, live in peace, we'll call it. And that's what I call it. You may be clean, but are you in peace? But you may be clean, but are you free and at peace? And that's where you want to go. So I want the people to know that it's allergy, theory that you hang on to, think about it, and you may want to, you know, let it go.
Well, it's very interesting because I recognize when I work with people in my practice, because, you know, I've had a practice for, I'm in my 29th year, which is really hard since I'm only 29. It means I must have started young. it's like when people come in and have this, well, I'm an alcoholic, so I can never ever drink a liquor again. There's this twofold step. There are people, I do believe, that have a physiological, what you're referring to as the allergy, they have a physiological, it shows up a lot in Native Americans, where they have no tolerance for alcohol. No, they should never drink again, because it would be like saying I'm allergic to milk and you drink milk and it's going to have an adverse reaction.
But then
there are the I drink to avoid the pain. There are the emotional drinkers. And when you give the emotional drinker, when you heal the wound, what you're referring to as the wound, you heal the wound, then, and you give them the tools and skill sets how to keep it healed and how to live life now with a healed wound, they can drink. If they want to have a drink, they can have a drink, because they can stop. And the mythos.
Dr. Kevin, I love you. Thank you. Oh, my God. Somebody gets it.
Yep. I've been on that ship for a long time.
Awesome.
So, you know, it is about not giving your power away. And this has always been one of my, I tend to have that AA is really great to a point, but until they give you a 13th step, which is the point where you fly, and you're not just taught to, stop drinking alcohol, but smoke more cigarettes and drink more coffee and don't deal with the addictive part of the personality and what is the addiction issue.
Right. Underlying.
It's like, at the time it started, and it's helped tons of people, and I know people that it started, that it's helped, but people come into my practice and they've had to walk away from AA because it stunts the growth. It gets them to a certain point, but it's like saying, okay, I'm going to teach you how to be a perfect fifth grader, but I'm never going to get you to sixth grade. I'm never going to make you get into middle school. That's where you stay.
Beautiful. Yes. Yeah, hence the white knuckle approach, you know, the herd mentality. I've seen that a lot. Yeah, instead of being free and just living. And when I've had clients, they ask me, Mr. Oden, I go, what, can I have a drink? Have we handled your issues? Have we handled the pain and that caused this whole thing? Well, let's give it a shot and see. And hey, now they're drinking to enjoy as opposed to drinking to escape reality. It's a big difference.
Yep. And the other thing is it increases the dependency control issue. If I don't go to a meeting five times a week, then I'm going to fall off the – how is that empowering?
Well, now we go to meetings anonymous, sir.
We have probably 6 minutes left before our show winds down, and I'm going to ask you the last question.
Okay.
What load of crap is going on in the world that you just want to get off your chest and help people see it's a load of crap and how to avoid it?
Well, the load of crap I wanted to give, I think we already started that with the Varsity Blues, because that really got my whistle, you know. What load of crap? You may have to help me on this one, because the Varsity Blues scandal has really inundated the news and everything, and I'm a fair guy. I like to know that when we do things, we work hard at it, and that it doesn't mean we're going to get it, but at least we have something to strive for. And if we don't get it, we can move in another direction.
I think that it's a load of crap that I'm going to run this one out by you and see how you comment on it. I think it's a load of crap that that you need to go to college at all. I mean, I went,
beautiful.
You went, we have degrees, but I know people that are perfectly happy and very successful on their own right that never went to college. And I think that there's a whole load of crap of, especially today, and you have to have seen this stuff, Michael, where you have people that are into their mid-30s that can't afford to buy a house because they're paying off their student loans. What a load of crap.
Yes.
And they're not even working in the field they got a degree in.
No, you hang it on the wall. You make it look pretty.
Mine's so old, there's no way to make it look pretty.
That debt behind it. Yeah, it's really interesting to where, what do you do with that? And more people are going into the trade, you know? People think community college is like a pariah. No, they have wonderful things over there. They have wonderful opportunities. It doesn't have to say Yale all the time. Just where do you want to go?
No, drop that Y. Just stick with the Yale. I think that, you know, also where we have to stop dangling things that increase the double standard of America that is truly appalling in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And that's everything from income disparity to, right. Let's look at it. We're going to make cuts to social service programs, to Medicare and Medicaid, so we can reverse the $1 trillion deficit we have because you gave rich folks a tax break? Really?
Yes.
Really? Make this make sense in my mind, because I'm at a loss here.
Yeah.
There's a load of crap for you.
That's a huge load of crap, sir. We're going to shovel it. Wow. It makes you wonder.
So,
point.
What is the number one thing before we run out of time?
Okay.
That you would like to share with my audience, the simple, most simple one thing they could do that would most change their life? You can say anything but buy my book. That's too much of a sales pitch.
Okay.
But
okay.
One thing. Not that you would. Nice. I know you, Michael.
One thing. Here's one thing. If you're hanging on to a word that was told to you a long time ago, we'll call it a curse. And if that word or phrase has impacted your self-worth, impacted, you know, your identification, how you see yourself, your confidence, now's the time to understand who said it, why they said it, and have empathy for them, for they know not what they do, and to put it to rest and not carry that with you anymore. And don't allow that word or phrase to dictate your behavior in the future from stopping you to do what you really want to do, creating doubt and things of that nature. So unbelieve it, don't let it carry any weight, and move forward, realizing that the person or people who said that were in pain themselves, and you're paying for their pain. It doesn't mean you have to believe it. Now you can unbelieve it. That's one of the, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because you can take a painful word, a painful experience, a painful phrase, and you can look at it and you can say, I can either let that limit me or expand me. It can demotivate me or it can motivate me. You know, one of the things that was a reinforced belief system that went right up into my early adult years one of the adults in my life was that I was stupid. I was constantly told I was stupid. Constantly told I was stupid. And in fact, when I got accepted into college, they made it very clear that there would be no support for me because I was too stupid to make it through college.
Wow.
And I took that and I did my schooling full time and then had to go part time because I was paying my own way because I was actually working a lot. In the field I was getting a degree in, and I was getting promoted, and I was becoming more successful. And at any point I could have said, you know, it's 6 years in, and I'm my first degree was in business management. I'm a manager. I've worked in three different industries. I have successfully proven I can do what this degree would do. I stayed with it because it motivated me to show the diploma to that person. And so I used it. And sometimes it wasn't always healthy, but sometimes it was. Sometimes we can take those words and we can decide to let them motivate us.
Yes. And Dr. Kim, that's called ego strength, and you have that.
Well, I've been told I have a big ego, so I guess that makes sense.
No, meaning, meaning you don't allow that situation to dictate what you're going to do in life. And that's what you did. And there's some people, unfortunately, who don't are not that strong, and it swallowed them up. And they carry this load with them wherever they go, and they don't know how to let it go. So there's people like you and people who carry it with them.
I think that it's important for the listeners to understand that, you know, I don't care whether you're 20, 30, 40, 50, or 60, unless you have a health reason why you can't, you can always go into the gym and get stronger. So you can always get that ego strength. It's never too old to be young again and rewrite your
never.
Future.
Never.
Michael Oden, thank you for coming, and tell me you're going to come back and play with me again sometime.
Absolutely. Be
honest. When Nobody's Home, author Michael Oden, come to facebook.com/mydrkevin, and you'll find all about it, and he's going to post the link to the book there. Thank you for joining us here on the Dr. Kevin Show.